Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
A crowded 2020 field gets even more crowded today. Beto O'Rourke, the former Texas congressman whose national profile skyrocketed after his 2018 Senate race loss, says he was born to be in the race for president.
This moment of peril produces perhaps the greatest moment of promise for this country and for everyone inside of it.
And joining me now for a check-in on 2020 is WBUR's senior political reporter, Anthony Brooks. Anthony, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hey, Chris.
So I want to get your reaction to Beto O'Rourke's announcement in just a minute, but as we know here in New England, better than most, all paths to the White House lead through New Hampshire.
Right.
That's where Elizabeth Warren will be headed tomorrow. You were just up there this weekend. Bernie Sanders had his first rally in the state. You were there when Warren announced earlier. You say these two candidates are headed for a clash in New Hampshire. Can you talk about what you saw while you were up there?
Yeah, a clash. I mean, two candidates from, they both come from neighboring states. Warren, of course, from Massachusetts. Sanders, of course, from Vermont. They have home field advantage in a way in the all-important first-in-the-nation primary. Both represent the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, which means they're fighting for a lot of the same voters. So that's why I was talking about a possible clash up there. And voters regard them in many ways as political twins. They're both talking a lot about inequality, how Washington is rigged at the expense of working Americans. They're both pushing for big changes. Warren for what she calls systemic change and Sanders for what he calls a political revolution. So, Chris, let's listen to a bit of their message, starting with Bernie Sanders this past weekend in Concord.
This campaign is going to transform our country and finally, create an economy and a government which works for all of us, not just the 1%.
An America that works only for the wealthy and the well-connected, that's corruption, plain and simple, and we need to call it out for what it is.
So that was Elizabeth Warren at her first New Hampshire presidential campaign rally this past January.
Yeah, I'm noticing a bit of a similar theme there in their messages. We know these are two pretty progressive candidates. How are voters thinking about their two candidates?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough choice for progressives, especially when you consider there are lots of other candidates as well talking about a lot of the same issues. So for voters, Sanders is probably better known. That has a lot to do with the fact that in 2016, of course, he won the primary in New Hampshire. He thumped Hillary Clinton by 22 points on his road to winning some 22 national caucuses and primaries. So he's arguably, at this point, in this very early stage, the front runner. He's also raised a lot of money, $10 million in the first 2 days, attracted more than a million volunteers online. And so he's counting on people like this. Here's Susan Dodge of San Bornton, New Hampshire. She voted for him in 2016 and says she's sticking with him in 2020.
Bernie really worries about the little guy. That's his major concern. He sticks by his message, always has and always will.
So that's interesting. I'm sure he's got some loyalty from voters there. Are there any that you talked to that have decided to switch over to Warren's camp?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's important to remember, as I stressed a moment ago, this is early times. And it's important to remember that this primary is almost a year away. It's a lifetime in politics. So there's no guarantee that Sanders can count on that legion of supporters that backed him last time. For example, here's Ray Lanier of Concord. He voted for Sanders in 2016, but says now he's got two big concerns.
Age and who's going to win against Trump, I think. Those are the two issues. I'm 78, 79 next month, so I certainly understand what age does to you. I think that's a big asset or not.
Or know. Not. I yeah. So Lanier says he's moving toward Warren.
Yeah, very much so.
And how do they differ?
Style. As far as policies, I don't see much difference between them in reality.
So they do have different styles. They do also have some policy differences. I'm curious, how are you seeing this race? What's going to tip the scales? Is it style? Is it policy difference?
It's interesting. It's hard to say, but let me talk about the style because that gets to who these two people are. You know, Sanders comes from this long tradition of political activism. When you go to these rallies, Chris, you know, he favors big rallies, long policy speeches. He rarely mentions his own biography. Warren, by contrast, she's a former professor. She favors smaller events where she can go one-on-one with voters. She offers personal stories, and this is a key part of her message. She uses her biography to explain what ails America today. For example, how her mother could use a minimum wage job to hold the family together when her dad got sick and lost his job. How she was able to go to a commuter college for $50 a semester and go on to become a Harvard professor. So she's committed to a set of policies, the wealth tax, for example, on the super wealthy, that she sees as leveling the playing field for working Americans.
All right. So there is some difference in how they're delivering the message. Is there any policy difference here? Are you seeing any daylight between the platforms?
It's not really. The bigger difference between them has to do with their fundamental beliefs and how they describe them. So, you know, Sanders, a self-described democratic socialist, he talks about a political revolution. And he uses very blunt language to challenge some of these basic institutions in the capitalist system, the insurance and pharmaceutical industries, the military-industrial complex, and Wall Street, where Sanders says he wants to do things like break up the big banks. Now, Warren, too, wants to break up the big banks and has recently proposed breaking up the big tech companies.
Right.
But she's not a democratic socialist. She describes herself as a capitalist. She was once a registered Republican. She says she believes in markets, that markets work when they have rules and when they have a cop on the beat enforcing those rules. And she can point to her work setting up the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau as an example of what she means by having a cop enforcing the rules. So at least in terms of her approach, she's able to sort of embrace the current system in a way that Sanders doesn't, as long as it can be policed in a way that makes sense.
Great. Anthony, stay with us. I want to bring in another voice here, WBUR senior news correspondent Kimberly Atkins, who joins us now from Washington, D.C. Kimberly, I'd love to hear your thoughts on all this, but we do have some breaking news that I want to start with this last hour. The Senate has officially voted to overturn President Trump's border emergency declaration. The House had passed a similar rejection last month. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, it was expected. The White House tried really hard to lobby enough Republicans on the Senate side to try to defeat this, but that effort was not quite enough. You had roughly a dozen Republicans joining with the Democrats to essentially nullify this emergency declaration that would divert funding from other things, from the Department of Defense and other programs, to construction of the border wall. The White House is expected to veto it. There weren't quite enough Republicans that could withstand to overcome that veto in the Senate. They would have needed about 20 to do that. So the White House is expected to reject this, but this is still a really stinging defeat for the White House and President Trump and his signature issue, which is the wall.
Yeah. Okay, so back to what you just heard Anthony Brooks talking about. Sanders and Warren are competing in New Hampshire. They're obviously two among many that is the Democratic 2020 field. There are some folks that have kind of a bigger national profile, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker maybe. How much do you think Warren and Sanders' closeness to New Hampshire will help them in the primary?
You know, I think it depends on the voter, of course. You know, talking to people in New Hampshire, they don't necessarily think that it is a hometown advantage to be from New England. New Hampshire understands that the folks there understand that they are an early primary state, that they're important, and that they play a big role in vetting who the nominee will be. And I agree with Anthony. What I'm hearing is the number one issue is, can the person beat Donald Trump? They are focused on who can beat Donald Trump. And I think that's going to be the measure. Someone shows that they have that fight in them and that they can take him on in a general election and win. That gets them into the door. And then beyond that, they have to describe just how they'll do that and what their policies are.
Okay, so speaking of someone that they're maybe raising a question of whether or not it can win, let's turn to Beto O'Rourke. He has now officially jumped in the race. Anyone surprised? What do you make of his entrance?
Yeah, it's interesting to me, this idea that a three-term congressman with a sparse legislative record, whose biggest claim to fame is that he lost a Senate race, can be considered a credible candidate. On the other hand, he generated lots of excitement. He raised a ton of money, and he came close to winning, you know, the Senate race in a very red state. And but it will be interesting to see, because he could be that sort of centrist, moderate centrist voice that could galvanize moderate Democrats and independents in the heartland. But I'm curious to see if he can translate the talents that allowed him to come so close to winning the Senate race in Texas to the national political stage. It'll be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you raise, because a lot of the analysis has been that this is a party that's moving to the left. O'Rourke has said he won't call himself a progressive. He's been criticized for some kind of more centrist policies and tendencies. Kimberly, how do you think his candidacy will play in New Hampshire and continuing forward?
I think we'll have to see. I mean, in many ways, his slate is a blank one that hasn't really been painted yet. While you have others who are coming in with labels, you know, with Democratic Socialist or Progressive, he is really keeping that open. He is capitalizing on the energy that he generated from his message, that aspirational message that reminds a lot of people of Barack Obama, and that he was able to get as much support as he did in a red state. Is not only getting the attention of a lot of Democrats, but also Republicans. You know, one conservative group, Club for Growth, has already run ads against him. Republicans are clearly, they clearly see him as a threat. And I think that's one thing, as we talked about, the ability to beat Donald Trump, the ability to show that he could be a threat to Republicans, is something that a lot of Democratic voters are going to be impressed by.
All right, so this is an ever-growing field. I want to ask you, we know Warren is headed to New Hampshire this week. Congressman Seth Moulton says he will be traveling to the Granite State sometime in the next few days, followed by a visit to South Carolina. Moulton hasn't officially jumped into this race. Anthony, is he in, and how could that complicate things for Warren and Sanders in New Hampshire?
I don't know if he's in. I know that he's been giving this serious thought for a long time. He went out to Iowa way back when for the Polk County Chicken Fry, which is about one of the earliest sort of Democratic organizing events in Iowa that exists. He's been a little coy about it, but we know he's giving it serious thought. He hopes he can occupy that sort of national security lane as a military veteran. So, yeah, he's going to New Hampshire. He appears to be moving closer to a decision. We'll just have to wait and see. I don't know if Kimberly's got some
closer
intelligence on this.
Moulton's potential entrance.
Yeah, well, I talked to him yesterday, and he continues to say that he is taking a very serious look at it. He sees his background as a veteran, as somebody who has gone out and recruited veterans to run for office and win and really generate excitement as part of a new generation, as he likes to talk about it. He sees himself having something to say, and he's going to make his pitch on Saturday in New Hampshire and then move on to South Carolina and back to Iowa.
Another story with a long way to go. That's WBUR senior news correspondent Kimberly Atkins. Kimberly, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Anthony, thanks for the time.
Always my pleasure, Chris.
Stay with us. Coming up, how parents are reacting to the alleged college admission scam. I'm Chris Sitterick, and this is Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.